Hey all, nice short podcast today with cardiac expert Sherazade Ruano, and she was also a professional ballet dancer, so she knows all about fitness and health. But today we're going to talk in a little detail about stress and how you manage post a cardiac event, but it also applies, of course, to preventing that event in the first place. So don't forget, the links are down below to our new conference this weekend. We've got 14 of the best speakers in the whole area of chronic disease. So huge opportunity. It's going to be a fantastic event. But with that, here we go. Hey all, great podcast today. Great conversation with Sherazade Ruano. And I probably got that wrong. But she is a cardiac nurse specialist for rehabilitation. And she set up the rhythmiabreath.com wellness program and is engaged officially with the NHS. So enormous experience, and also a fresher, more vivacious face, shall we say, than a lot of my crusty old cardiologist guy guests, which is often the case. So hey, great to see you, Sherry.
Hello. Hi, Ever. Thank you so much for that introduction. You got the name right, by the way, but the short version is Sherry. Everyone calls me Sherry. It's a great pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
Excellent. No, my pleasure. And Sherry, that makes it a little easier. I don't know if I can keep reproducing the name correctly. But, you know, I gave a very brief intro there because I usually let the guest, you know, give a better, short, concise intro and background. So maybe you could just start with that. It'd be cool.
Absolutely. It was pretty accurate, by the way. So my background is in cardiac nursing. I studied medicine, but in the UK, I practice as an arrhythmia specialist now. So my area of interest and passion has always been in cardiology and mental well-being. So I worked in the NHS for 9 years, still work as an arrhythmia specialist at Hammersmith Hospital. And 7 years ago, I trained as a therapist. I became a counsellor. For various reasons, either because because I felt helpless. I didn't really know how to help my patients beyond the narrow medical views on how to look after a patient, right? And there was so much more in terms of their mental health, emotional well-being. So I retrained as a counselor, and I combined now my expertise and experience as a nurse with my private practice. That it's in a nutshell who I am and what I do. In the meantime as well, I set it up, Rhythmia Breath, as you correctly said. It's a program that is attached to the NHS now, and we work with patients and with preventive cardiology, cardiac rehabilitation, inherited cardiac conditions, you name it. And that's me, basically, in a nutshell.
Excellent, Sherry. And, you know, I love that because I think, and it's in one of the interviews you did, you've kind of integrated more holistic type medicine with classic medicine. So rather being all holistic, which these days often gets kind of criticized or challenged by the system, you've integrated the two, and you're getting the best of both, if you will.
Yeah, that is correct. That is the core value of the program. It's merging modern medicine with holistic practices. And the idea came from two branches. Number one is my personal experience. I was a ballet dancer. I danced professionally 5 years. So I'm very much aware how the importance of understanding what happens in your body and in your mind to achieve healing and to feel your best, right? And number two, when I was diagnosed with Graves' disease as an autoimmune disease, I couldn't dance, I couldn't cycle, so I couldn't continue with my regular routines and as a high achiever also in exercise. So I started doing yoga therapy. Yoga is a form of therapy and stress management and relaxation to calm the activity of my nervous system and my immune system, because it was quite hyperactive. That's one of the main problems with Graves' disease. So I realized that there was so much more that I could also use in professional settings as a nurse. And then I retrained as well as a yoga therapist, and I started bringing this holistic part of yoga and stress management into the mainstream medicine. And that's basically how 11 years ago, we're going back a few years ago, I'm just younger than what I look. Actually older than what I look. That's a statement over. So this is basically what and how the program was born, my own experience and by me realizing that there was so much more I could do for my patients too.
Perfect. And the autoimmune kind of spectrum in the world over the last 50 years, it's a huge problem and it's much more prevalent than it was. But that's a whole topic on itself. So we'll probably stick with the more cardiac. I was thinking maybe it'd be good to go through some of your insights or kind of exemplars of patients or what you've learned over the last few years and successes and challenges in the cardiac sphere. And I know we've got you coming to speak, which is superb, at our We Love Our Heart conference, the 19th, 20th of November coming up. But it'd be great here to talk more generally on successes and challenges and insights.
Absolutely. And I'm very excited to be part of that conference. And hopefully I will be able to give more success stories and I'll be able to tell the audience my experience as a nurse and as a therapist too. I have many success stories, Ibert, to be honest, especially in my private practice. I work with an integrated team and I tend to have a multidisciplinary team in the way I work, right? So one of the most absolutely amazing stories that I could share with you right now, it's a gentleman, a high executive with a calcium score of, I believe it was almost 3,500, quite high, developed a heart attack, a smoker, quite high, cholesterol, mess up lipids, you name it, right? So that person, it is alive, still alive, but suffered a heart attack, quite a drastic heart attack. And so the cardiologists were not very hopeful in terms of his recovery, right? Because the heart attack was quite severe. And we go to the baseline that his calcium score was quite high. And in places in the heart where it's quite dangerous to have him, right? So had like a collection of stents, quite a significant and drastic cardiac rehabilitation, quite a severe and a long road to go, right? So this patient was referred to me by one of the consulting cardiologists I work in the NHS, and he said, "Here you are, good luck with it." Okay, right. So, and in approximately 6 to 8 months, right, the guide achieved a 15 to 16 weight kilos less. His cholesterol was almost back to normal. He was able to exercise. He was asymptomatic. He was not having any type of angina or angina attacks on exercise. And his stress management was incredibly under control. So he was actually doing such a great job. So this gentleman now runs marathons. He's gone back to running his own company. He's dealing with life but differently. He stopped smoking and he's alive thanks to the team that had around him. He's alive thanks to our input, not only my input but the input of the team that we had around him. That's a massive success story from a young guy of 42 after a massive heart attack. Most of the times people go straight into heart failure and having all sorts of undesirable side effects from a heart attack. But that's one of the most successful stories that I can share with you.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you know what? It just occurs to me, I've specialized quite a bit in coronary calcium. And actually, Dr. Arthur Agatston, who's at our conference next week, is a very dear personal friend now. And he invented the Agatston score algorithm. So he's been scanning people for nearly 40 years and he's serially scanning people. He first scanned 35 years ago. So it's a great test. But 3,000 and something, yeah, that's a big score. And he probably has the full metal jacket, well, as they say, of stents with that kind of score. But the Courage trial and then the Odyssey trial had quite shocking results in that the stents, didn't really prolong life over the long term, and they may alleviate symptoms. But even in the Odyssey trial with sham surgeries a few years ago, the symptom relieving may have been a bit confounded. So I think it just speaks to what you achieved with that man. It wasn't really the stents. I mean, it was truly the post-operative kind of treatment that he got. And I guess he was dedicated. He complied with all of your instruction, it sounds like, to achieve that.
Yes. One of the most, it's a combination of things, Ivor, right? But one of the most important things was, in this very specific case, it was the management of his stress and anxiety, right? Which later on we realized it was one of the main triggers for this heart attack, right? So that was one of the most fascinating things to see, is how this gentleman was able to manage his anxiety, was able to recognize the triggers, was able to understand his own story, right, and to work with how the huge impact that anxiety had in his body and mind.
Yeah, and you know, Sherry, that resonates, because there's so many causes, or you know, of heart disease and atherosclerosis progression, but stress is one of the biggies. I mean, diet is obviously huge, and foods that raise insulin and blood sugar and promote diabetes, but stress is a massive one, and probably for some people it's a huge factor, and for some people not so much. Everyone's different. But the stress, chronic stress, raises insulin, cortisol, the whole metabolic milieu is thrown into discord with stress, and most people just don't know how to manage it. They don't even know how to try to manage it.
Yes, that's correct. And I see that almost every day of my life.
Yeah.
People don't really know. It's unfortunate. Well, things are changing, Ivor, thanks to also people like you that spread messages, thanks to, you know, people that organize these fantastic conferences, such as the one and we're going to speak. Things are changing, but still, the medical community is very much focused on pharmacological management, and it's a shame, because there are many, many hundreds and thousands of success stories that have actually gone to a different approach, right? Obviously, we cannot forget the importance of, you know, taking the medication if it's necessary, and all the tests that we need, forget it. But there's also so much that we can do. And the main issue here, Ivor, is that people feel that they're not in control. They feel helpless. Yeah. Right, they feel that, okay, I have no control of my health, that's entirely up to my cardiologist, that's entirely up to my doctor. That's not really like that. It's really not like that. It needs to be a really nice combo, right? And part of my role as a therapist is to make people understand as well that their input, it's huge, it's so important, and they need to get the control back, right?
Yeah, empowerment. People just don't realize. And you're right, they subcontract to the medical system. It's so prevalent. Basically, okay, I've got a problem now. They're the experts. So basically, it's all up to them. And they just take whatever drugs are given to them, and they just don't take the ownership. I guess some people probably do a bit more exercise because they're told to do. And actually, that's the thing. Do you get much into trying to improve their diet as well, and breathing methods and exercises? There's a whole range of things. Did they, like that gentleman, for instance, did he actually take up yoga, which is powerful, or did he just do other tools without going the full thing and doing yoga and taking it on as a new lifestyle?
Yes, they tend to do the whole pack. They tend to also, you know, do gym and strength training and you know, cycling, yeah. Which is also incredibly important, right? If we know that the heart can tolerate it, right? If there's no very low ejection fraction, the person, we're recommending cardiac rehabilitation, we'd recommend the strength training, right? Which is fascinating. It's not at the moment my area of expertise. It was, as I ran a sports cardiology center for 2 years in Switzerland. But it is incredibly important that people have a very nice combo, right, of exercise, strength training, cardiovascular, nutrition, and stress management. But what it's, you know, what people don't really tend to understand that much is the importance of stress management. And they keep on asking me, but sure, why is this so important? Why do you want me to relax? Well, let's actually go to, you know, to the physiology of what stress can do to your body, right? How stress can impact your nervous system, right?
Yeah.
So Yeah, so but it's back to your question, Ivor. It's a nice combo, right? It needs to be combo.
Yeah, no, that's what it's all about is synergy. I mean, there's so many things you can do. There's the Pareto principle. You pick the top 20 biggest bang for the buck and you make sure you do those. But synergy. And you know, it's funny, I just came off this morning with Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, his talk we recorded. And he's actually going through very much the pharmaceutical kind of challenges. And he shared a lot of different studies that show that the benefits from many drugs are not quite what they appear to be. But he's also big into perceiving that stress is the biggest driver of heart disease. I tend to think diet is probably the heaviest hitter, and stress is hugely important. But he, interestingly enough, he sees stress as the biggest overall factor. And you know, we'll never know exactly which is the biggest, but that's where the synergy comes in. You hit the selection of big ones and you hammer them home, especially if your life's at stake. I mean, you know, it's the biggest project in your life. I always tell people, get a calcium scan, find out if you have hidden disease. And if you do, right, you've got now the biggest project in your life because it's keeping yourself alive. There's no more important venture.
Yeah, I like that because I it's funny that you say that. When I run sessions with executive, for example, I always tend to use the analogy of now you are your most important startup, right? Now there's no real, you've actually built a fantastic company, right? But now it's time to look after your own business, which is your own body, your own startup. And this, very high achievers and executives look at me like, what is this person talking about? But it's so true, right? It's time now to look after how the CMO work, how the CFO work, how the CEO is working within your own body. And I think that's a very beautiful analogy, and people tend to understand it.
Yeah, that would resonate. And of course, a lot of these people who are self-made and successful, they tend to be type A personalities. They run the engine hot and they will tend to have stress problems. But interestingly, something occurs to me. Things always occur to me and I just roll with them. That's the way I do discussions. But I used to say to people a long, long time ago, and it was just based on perception before I did all my research, but if you have stress that's natural evolutionary, it's fine to have fight or flight, to get aggressive, and to have an aggressive kind of stress that makes you tackle your problem. And it's acute and it's kind of, you know, rhythmic. It's appropriate. But the real problem, I said, is when you've got a constant background sense of dread. You hate your boss, you're worried about your job security, and your stress is kind of steady and droning. And that's the one that messes up your body. But if you get really excited over a major issue you're working on and you're firing on all cylinders for a few hours and then you relax and then you do it again, that's actually evolutionary appropriate, you know, spiking and rhythmic. And that's probably fine. I mean, what do you think? I mean, that's the way I kind of perceive it.
And I very much agree with your views, right? It is absolutely impossible to try to be on a state of parasympathetic activation constantly. Evolutionarily, that's not healthy and it's not normal, right? We were born with these two systems, right? Sympathetic and parasympathetic for a reason, right? And as you said, this picks a nice upward trend with a nice relaxation, nice curve, and again, it goes up and down. As you said, evolutionary, that is what we are designed to do, right? The problem lies when, specifically, when we talk about the nervous system, which is one of my areas of expertise in relaxation and stress management. The problem lies when the nervous system is constantly on alert, right? So we have this upward trend, right? And the relaxation is very mild, right? So, and then it again goes up. Right, and it goes up. So there's not a clear relaxation, there's not a nice downward curve, right? So the main problem here is not only that the nervous system and the adrenal glands are overworked, right, and overloaded, but also the amount of hormones that we release as a consequence of that effect, right? Cortisol, adrenaline, you name them, right? So one of the main things that I tend to explain to people in my practice is, okay, you can actually control what happens, right? Sometimes psychologically, mentally, it's very difficult, it's very challenging, right? Unless you've done 1,000 million hours of CBT and you can really control what your mind is doing, Ivor, it's really difficult. especially when we are in that moment of, oh, something triggered me. How do I stop that? Right. So what I explain to people is, okay, let's actually start working with our physiology, right? What can I do in order to modulate that response to slow down the activity of my nervous system, right? And to make my body and my mind understand that, okay, this is something that is a trigger for me. Let's actually contract that effect. And that is the reason why number one technique or instructions that I give is breathing practices, right? It's breath work techniques. Reasons why can actually be, it's an incredibly complex system, but very easy to explain. The respiratory system, right, is directly linked to our nervous system, to the peripheral nervous system, right? So the way we breathe alters and can affect our heart rate, our respiratory rate, right? So that is one of the main things that I always explained in my practice, always.
Yeah, and breathing is powerful. And you know, the funny thing is, to some people, I'm kind of known as the ultra, I don't know, logical or rationalist. I have no time for any woo. And yet the irony is there are many things of crucial metabolic and physiological importance, like breathing, that are ultra scientific, and yet they're perceived by people or lay people as kind of wooish, you know? But this one, breathing, I met a guy in London, 6 months ago. I was at some conference, and he has books out on breathing. I forget his name. He's an Irish guy. Anyway, that's embarrassing. I forget his name. But I did a short interview, and it just reminded me how important it was. And in the conversation, I was telling him that instinctively, 20 years ago, under high corporate kind of position stress, I instinctively began to realize at some level that when I was getting stressed chronically in major issues I was responsible for, like really big ones, I found myself holding my breath. And I begin to recognize I'm actually holding my breath and I'm tense. And I instinctively began to try and relax and breathe deeply. And I found it made a huge difference. And that was just a lucky finding. But later I realized exactly what you said, that they're intimately connected, the nervous system and your breathing patterns. And if you do it properly, you can actually truly affect the nervous system and all your adrenals. And if you do it badly, you can very deleteriously affect that system and make real physical problems just by the way you're breathing.
Yeah, absolutely correct. What you said is to just spot that, spot that. So it's so powerful. Breathing practices are, breathing exercises are so powerful that can even stop a panic attack, right? Certain practices, if done correctly, can stop panic attack, right? And there are many reasons why, and it's all physiology, right? And number one is you slow down the activity of your nervous system, but also slows down the heart rate. And when we slow the heart rate, we slow the respiratory rate. Also, certain practices are, we already know that certain breathing exercises triggers the vagus nerve, right? And as we know, the vagus nerve is just the guy that says to the parasympathetic nervous system, hey, it's time to start slowing the response down, right? So it is the science per se, right? Breathing exercises, breathing practices is science.
For sure. And I remember reading many years ago about it's fascinating how the brain initiates a kind of panic and then it sends out all the hormones to get the body ready. But in a kind of an irony, like a reinforcing feedback loop, the body then sends back to the brain that there's kind of a panic going on. It's like a feedback and reinforces. And it's not too surprising if it gets out of control, it just runs up to a fully fledged panic attack in some people. But then, like you say, the breathing can send back modifying and mitigating signals and actually slow down that process and physically bring it down. So it's a huge, powerful kind of lever. And sadly, a lot of people perceive it as kind of a bit wooish. They think, no, I'd need a pill or something for my panic attacks. I need real medicine for mine.
Yeah, it's a, unfortunately, it is a shame that not, many people know this, but it's not woo-woo. I've never actually seen it as
No.
woo-woo because we work with our own physiology, and I have a medical background. Well, I'm an arrhythmia specialist. I know the importance of understanding what we do with our bodies, right? So it is pure science, is working with our own physiology, but guess what? It takes a little longer than just taking a tablet, right? And what this tablet potentially do.
Yeah, and potentially the side effects. I mean, any medication, the funny thing is, if it's truly a medication with an effect, it has to be toxic at some level or in some people. Otherwise, it's not really a medication. That's kind of a definition. So you're entering a whole area of benefit and cost that's unclear where it's going. But you know what? I'm glad you emphasized that about it being science, because I've said a few times now about woo, but just to be brutally clear to the audience, it's just the problem that many lay people perceive it as, which is ironic when it's so ultra scientific. You know, it's just one of those ironies that lay people, if it's not nutri or pharmaceutical drugs, if it's not surgery, they perceive things as maybe being not as effective.
So yes, Ivor, I completely agree with that statement, and it's not woohoo, it's the real science, and as I mentioned earlier, it's just working with our own physiology. And hopefully more and more people and patients and doctors and consultants will understand the power of these techniques, because it gives so much power and control to the patients.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's your integration of more holistic with the more classic medicine is exactly how, if we get more of that kind of operation going on, we'll get more of that integration, and then it will become more and more accepted widely as a powerful tool that it is. But you know, I'm conscious, Sherry, I managed to catch you this morning in a busy working morning rather than an evening, and I'm conscious of your time. So we might maybe finish with any other insight or last thoughts you have to free you to go back to work. And we're going to see you at the conference next week anyway.
Excellent, absolutely. I'll be there in the conference. So the only thing I want to say, it's a huge thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here to spread the word, and not only my program, my method, but the importance of addressing our minds, and at the same time that we address our heart, right, which is equally important, and they work together. Heart and mind work together. That would be the last point I'd like to mention, and repeating my thanks to you for the opportunity to be here.
Oh, not at all, Sherry. And that's exactly it. Synergy. Synergy is what it's all about. And you know what? For this podcast, I'll just put the links down to your website, etc., and people can follow up there. And with that, no, great stuff, Sherry. Delighted to have you on board with the conference and for this discussion. And we'll be catching up again soon.
Excellent. Thank you, Ivor. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. So myself and Mark Felstead of We Love Our Heart are running the second We Love Our Heart online conference. We have 12 fantastic speakers, and we're going to have Q&A sessions after every talk. And I will moderate those and maybe interject with some of my thoughts, though I wouldn't want to contradict the speakers. But I have spent almost 10 years deep into cardiovascular and metabolic research, and I may have some thoughts on any or all topics. So the conference is on 19th and 20th of November. The first one was a tremendous success earlier this year. So we're rerunning again with many of the same brilliant minds, professors and doctors in cardiovascular and general disease research. And we're also going to add in some new speakers like Dr. Ken Berry and Dr. Sean Baker. He's an interesting guy with his own kind of personal proclivities towards certain diets. But overall, we're going to cover the gamut. We're going to have speakers that cover all of the topics around avoiding chronic disease, achieving weight loss, avoiding that heart attack, and understanding the diagnostics and the lifestyle and diet interventions, and even genetics this year. We're going to cover it all. So let's quickly go through the lineup. So the speakers, we've got many coming back with new talks, and we've got some new people. We have Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, of course, and he's going to focus this time on the interaction between pharma and health. So how do you achieve excellent health, avoid heart attacks, without being drawn into the pharma rabbit hole of countless drugs? So a fascinating talk. Dr. Ken Berry's coming on board. The Lies My Doctor Told Me was his best-selling book, and he is going to go through a lot of key lies that you need to understand or you'll fall for them. Dr. Sean Baker's coming along, the carnivore orthopedic surgeon, controversial in ways, and he's going to share all of his insights around heart disease and his blood work and the tricky topic of carnivorism. Dr. Nadir Ali, brilliant researcher and cardiologist, and he's going to talk most likely on sleep and heart rate variability and lots of other diagnostics that help you have insight into your risk and how you reduce your risk, of course. Dr. William Davis is back again. Last time he focused on small dense LDL and also the microbiome. And this time he's going to focus in on lipopolysaccharide as an independent risk factor that many miss. Dr. Arthur Agatston is back, and he's going to go through genetics as well as all of the key insights you can get from the new scanning technology modalities and much more. Dr. Donald Collins is going to double up with Dr. Alan Farrell. They're going to go through insulin measurement with Metabolic and all the insights he's getting from many, many patients over the last 18 months, measuring their insulin and getting key insights into their issues and how to resolve them. And also Dr. Farrell in the Q&A can go through sports nutrition and things relating to sports performance. Dr. Thomas Levy again is back, and he's going to give us another version of the insights to dental infections and how they can drive cardiovascular disease. I was chatting to Dr. Michael Eads just now, and he's a busy man these days, but we put in this placeholder similar to his talk at the last conference, but he'd actually like to do one on the incretins and diet, a very, very important thing to understand to avoid chronic disease. Then we have Sherazade and Angela, who are two ICU nurses, cardiovascular rehabilitation specialty, enormous experience. And they're going to go through breathing, relaxation for the heart and mind, and recovery and exercise after heart attacks. So quite a lot there that doesn't usually get covered. And in the Q&A, we can tease it out beautifully. Dr. Joel Kahn, a new pal of mine, is in, and he's America's top vegan cardiologist. But don't worry, he's not going to try and push you onto a vegan diet. He's going to go through Heart Disease Prevention 2022, the latest technologies and scanning and how to prevent heart attacks, aside from specific diet choices. And then Gabor Erdosi, so the all-round metabolic warrior or Jedi, and he's going to go through an updated version of his talk with new insights, and he's going to go through the immune system function. And the Q&A, as always, is going to be fascinating, especially with Gabor. And as I mentioned at the start, for the VIP attendees, you'll get the benefit of all the Q&A sessions and all of the recordings available very soon after the conference. So there you have it. It's going to be a fantastic 2 days, double the last one, and we're going to cover everything that's important. And the Q&As are really, really useful, we find, to tease out anything that's not entirely clear. So November 19th and 20th, the links are down below. There's the basic option of just viewing live, and then there's also a VIP option where you get to be in the Q&A sessions and also get all of the talks and Q&As sent as video packages after the conference. So please do share, let people know. After going through these 2 days, you're going to be an expert pretty much in chronic disease. And there's so much useful information we're going to have, and it's going to be great fun too. So please share. The links are down below, including to the new Facebook group page. And we're probably going to be streaming live to Facebook for people who sign up, but we've yet to fully flesh that out. So great stuff, and see you there.